We begin with breaking news from Queen's Park and the measures that will affect tens of thousands of people across the province. The new vaccination rules for public service workers and the MPP now without a party over his refusal to get a shot.
Vaccine requirements also on the way for city employees in Toronto. The strong stance being taken in more workplaces as Ontario combats the fourth wave of COVID-19. Good evening. The moves to mandate keep mounting, but so too do the questions around how far an employer can go in that quest.
And tonight, that back and forth is on full display directly inside Ontario's halls of power. We begin with CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello. Colin.
Nathan, just a few seconds ago, Premier Doug Ford issued a statement confirming that he has ejected Conservative MPP Rick Nichols from the Progressive Conservative Caucus because he refused to get the COVID-19 vaccine. The Premier says Nichols will now sit as an independent MPP and he will not be allowed to run as a Progressive Conservative in the election in June of 2022. The Premier says elected officials in this province have to lead by example and they have to be held to a higher standard, which is why he elected to eject one of his own caucus members. This rule is also being applied to the wider public service in Ontario. 64,000 employees, including all of those who work here at Queen's Park, are now going to be subject to new vaccination rules. They will either have to prove that they've been vaccinated or they will have to provide some kind of medical exemption that they are not unvaccinated. If they cannot provide that, the unvaccinated will have to take a mandatory course and regular testing to prove that they do not have the virus. All these changes coming during a dynamic afternoon here at Queen's Park. A moment of defiance from an MPP about to sever ties with his own party. Rick Nichols, a progressive conservative MPP since 2011, bluntly stated that he would not give in to the government's demands.
For personal reasons, together with my wife Diane of 44 years, I made the personal decision not to inoculate with the COVID-19 vaccine. Under no circumstances will I, nor should any Ontarian, be forced or coerced to do something against their will.
Nichols was promptly removed from the Progressive Conservative benches and will now remain as an independent MPP. Another Progressive Conservative MPP, Christina Midas, will remain in the caucus after providing a note of medical exemption. But Nichols says he was simply following the Premier's own words.
I took the Premier at his word that vaccination is a choice and that all Ontarians have a constitutional right to make such a choice.
Conservative strategists, however, say the Premier's decision is in line with public opinion.
This is leadership by example for Premier Ford, and he's setting a tone of what he expects as the head of government, especially a year before an election.
While the Premier was dealing with internal government strife, the Ontario Progressive Conservative Party was dealing with an external problem. The party sent out fundraising letters that mimicked invoices, creating concerns about a possible mail scam. After days of silence, the Ontario PC Party is finally responding to the situation. In a statement, the party says, "At no time was it our intention to mislead valued supporters. This correspondence," the party says, "was sent to a limited group of supporters by one of our vendors and will not happen again." The question remains, however, how did this happen in the first place? Those who have worked on political campaigns in the past say fundraising is often contracted out to third parties.
Political parties, their political office, especially before and after elections, are very small and tiny. And so a lot of their operations is either outsourced to volunteers or, in the case of fundraising, often outsourced to third parties. So this is completely normal.
But PC party sources say historically, the leader of the party or an advisor would personally approve fundraising emails sent out.
The things that do get done by third parties, it's approved by someone. And someone in the PC party approved this. They said that this was okay to go out the door.
The address listed on the fundraising campaign leads back to the Responsive Marketing Group, a Toronto company that boasts online that it's raised $175 million over the years. According to Elections Ontario, the PC party has paid Responsive Marketing $1.7 million in consulting fees since 2019. The NDP believes the fundraising letter violated the law.
And we're hearing that this may, in fact, violate some federal laws around mail scams. And so we're looking into that right now.
The government indicates those who receive the letter will also receive an apology. Back here at Queen's Park, MPPs are set to return to the legislature in mid-September. While there will be new vaccination rules, the big question is, what about the vaccination consequences? The progressive conservative government says those who are unvaccinated will have to be tested regularly. But the NDP and the Liberals want to go even further than that. They're asking for a policy that would prevent MPPs who are unvaccinated and their staff from even stepping foot inside Queen's Park. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Meanwhile, the province says nearly 82% of eligible people in Ontario have now received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, and more than 74% of eligible people have received their second dose. That represents more than 9.6 million people. From the province to the city and the dosing deadline now facing municipal workers.
The mayor wants all staff fully vaccinated by the end of October. But what happens after that is up for interpretation. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live outside City Hall tonight with more. Beth.
Michelle, just over 10 weeks, that's how long city employees have to get fully vaccinated under the City of Toronto's new mandatory vaccine policy, even though the consequences for those who refuse hasn't been decided.
The pressure is on for more than 37,000 City of Toronto staff who haven't received the COVID-19 vaccine to get the jab. The new mandatory vaccine policy driven, the mayor says, by the highly contagious Delta variant.
We have to take all reasonable steps to protect health, to protect each other, to protect the still fragile path to recovery.
The push to get protected comes with deadlines. After Labor Day from September 7th to 13th, employees need to show proof of vaccination. Those unvaccinated or who won't disclose their status will be required to attend education sessions, followed by proof of their first dose by September 30th, their second dose by October 30th. The city says it will accommodate workers legally entitled to accommodations, but what happens to employees who refuse after October is unclear.
We're not taking any options off the table or putting any particular ones on the table today, except to say that we will deal with this.
The TTC says it's joining the city with a mandatory policy. It applies to 16,000 staff plus its contractors. They'll need to show they got a shot or a medical reason why not. Toronto Police not ready to go there yet, saying we are considering all of the same elements the city mentioned today, such as human rights and medical accommodations, and how all of this would apply in our workplace.
If you have people in public service, I think they have a duty to be vaccinated.
There should be consequences just because it's a matter of public safety.
I'm fully vaccinated, but I just don't like the idea of forcing people.
Unlike the TTC, the city says it's reviewing agreements for contractors like these workers. Both got the shot, divided on making it mandatory.
It's not right because they're taking away people's freedom.
Well, what does that have to do with freedom? It's not like we live in jail. You have choices. There's a good choice and a bad choice. This would be the right choice to get a shot.
A choice the mayor says is about our collective responsibility. Requiring the vaccine is taking every precaution.
The city says rapid and regular testing is not part of the focus of its policy. It hopes to educate and persuade employees to get the shot. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell at City Hall. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. And as more companies and organizations release their regulations, can they really enforce what they enact?
That debate is only sure to intensify with talk around exemptions and accommodations. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live with that part of the story. Natalie.
And Nathan, already some of the people affected by today's announcement are being very vocal about their concerns, but many labor lawyers say that when it comes to a vaccine mandate, employers do have a lot of power.
The TTC was quick to reaffirm the city's plan, announcing that as of September 13th, all of its employees would be required to be vaccinated against COVID-19. The transit union, though, was just as quick to blast the move, saying in a statement, Local 113 supports the right of every member of Local 113 to make their own informed decisions about their personal health matters, including vaccination. We oppose mandatory vaccination of Local 113 members.
If you do not get vaccinated and you're in a role that requires you to be vaccinated because you're going to be interacting with other employees, interacting with other clients or customers, you may just find yourself without a job.
The TTC says its policy is being finalized and details will be available by the end of August. But labor lawyers say whatever the workforce, vaccine hesitancy, anxiety, or discomfort does not qualify as a human rights exemption to an immunization mandate.
Unless there is a clear, cogent medical reason as to why you cannot take this vaccine, you may very well get walked to the door, probably with a severance package. This doesn't qualify as, you know, high-minded, egregious misconduct. They can't fire you for cause, but it looks like they're going to be able to fire you.
Very specific religious accommodations would need to be addressed. But experts say there's no duty to allow employees who simply don't want to get immunized to work on their own.
That's an issue of accommodation, and employers can allow people to work remotely if the job permits for that. But employers don't have to create at-home or remote work for an individual who has to perform his or her duties, the essential conditions of their job.
The head of the union representing 20,000 of the city's inside workers said in a statement, "Some of our members have legitimate human rights grounds for remaining unvaccinated. And I am pleased the city has said it intends to accommodate those employees. As always, we will fulfill our duty to represent members with their human rights concerns in the workplace." The transit union, meanwhile, said today that it will aggressively oppose any action by the TTC that it says constitutes an unreasonable exercise of management's rights. Reporting live, I'm Natalie Johnson. Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Natalie. And our online team is staying on top of all of these developments from today's announcements, from Queen's Park to City Hall. You can find their continuing coverage at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Turning to the COVID-19 case count across the province, Public Health Ontario reporting 531 new cases in its most recent update. 456 of those are among people who are not fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 26,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and that puts the province's positivity rate at 2.4%.
338 additional cases are now considered resolved, raising that total to nearly 544,000 over the course of the pandemic. 17 more deaths are linked to the virus, although the province points out 15 of those deaths occurred 2 months ago and are now included as part of a data catch-up. 9,448 lives have been lost to COVID-19 here in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 116 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 63 in Peel and 62 in York Region. Hamilton has 46 new cases, with 29 in Durham, 17 in Halton, and 9 in Niagara.
And just ahead, a focus on academics before a return to the classroom. Business is busy at private tutors. The mood among students looking to get back into their educational routine.
They are 18 sunflowers symbolizing the 18-year-old cyclist struck and killed on a downtown street.
His death prompting renewed calls to increase safety on Toronto roads. CTV's Austin Delaney is live at Bloor Avenue with more. Austin.
Well, he was a good boy, his distraught mother told me, on his way to college in a couple of weeks. His life, though, cut short last night when he went out for a bike ride and was hit by a truck.
18-year-old Miguel Joshua Escanan was cycling just north of the corner of Bloor and Avenue Road when he collided with a cement truck. Today, his grieving mother came to the corner to see where her only son died.
She is a good boy. I don't know what can I say, but it's too painful for me. I'm sorry. It's too hard. I don't know.
At the scene this morning, Martin Reese, a stranger to the Escanan family, placed 18 sunflowers on the light standard, one for each year the young man lived.
Quite frankly, it could have been any one of us. I ride my bike for 30 years in the city. I rode my wife to work this morning because I was scared she was going to get hit.
There is a bike lane along Bloor Street and another coming north, but it stops at Bloor and Avenue Road, frustrating cyclists.
Then it ends, and then what? It's still a nasty, tight lane into a highway. And hello, you can't bring the person back. I'm so sorry for his parents.
I come on the sidewalk, but then I'm in the way of the pedestrians. So why not make this the proper adjusted width for both the cyclists and the pedestrians and give enough room for the vehicles?
The city has introduced more permanent and temporary bike lanes during the pandemic as people moved away from public transit.
I would say the pandemic caused a cycling revolution. Tons more people on bikes. It was the only way to get around safely and get some exercise alone. And so the city had to catch up. And we want to see sustained commitments and the temporary bike lanes made permanent from now on.
Eskenan's family is calling for a bike lane north of Bloor.
They have to put the bike lane here.
Bike lane, yeah.
Avenue Road don't have a bike lane.
The 18-year-old was to begin studying electrical engineering at Seneca College this fall.
And Miguel is Toronto's first bicycle fatality of the year. Toronto police have not yet said if they've laid charges against the driver of that truck. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, let's talk about the forecast. Lindsay, with a look at the current conditions. I know it's a hot one, especially wearing a suit outside.
Oh, absolutely, Nathan. We made it to a high of 31 degrees today in the city of Toronto, but of course it felt warmer than that. It's been a very humid summer. Right now it's 30 degrees in Brampton, it's 28 in Hamilton, and it's 29 in Niagara Falls, but it feels like 36 in all of those locations. Here's a look at where we stand currently. You might find a little relief today on the Toronto Islands or near the shoreline of Lake Ontario, but it's also going to be very warm through the overnight hours tonight. Winds right now are coming out of the north, so a little bit of a light breeze off of Georgian Bay as well as Lake Huron. Not much to show you here on the satellite and radar. There's one cell that I'm watching near Napanee and Prince Edward County, but overall we're looking at a pretty dry 7-day forecast. Those details are coming up a little later in the newscast. For now, Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Anti-Semitic vandalism hit a Toronto synagogue, and it is not the only recent local incident of hate being investigated. Police were called to the Beth Shalom Synagogue on Eglinton Avenue after hate graffiti was discovered yesterday morning. It's being treated as a hate crime. At least two other incidents were also reported, one at a school, another at a bus shelter, but police have not linked them. A photo of a suspect wanted in connection with the synagogue vandalism is out there. Police are asking anyone with information to contact them. Today is a national holiday in Afghanistan commemorating the country's independence from Britain in 1919.
Well, the occasion comes as the Taliban solidifies their takeover, as many Afghans continue to flee and others show their opposition to the militant group. Demonstrators across Kabul unfurled the national flag, now seen as a sign of defiance, as the Taliban have their own flag. Armed Taliban fighters broke up that rally and others across Afghanistan. Satellite images taken above Kabul today show crowds around the airport. Reports suggest Taliban fighters have been stopping at least some of those trying to reach the area where U.S. and allied soldiers are stationed as they ramp up evacuation flights. Meanwhile, there are emotional appeals in this country to help those looking to leave Afghanistan.
And that includes young people seeking a safer future. CTV's Sean Lethong reports.
With the Taliban in control of Afghanistan, gunfire heard in the streets and chaotic scenes from those trying to evacuate, a desperate plea from a 13-year-old boy in Kabul, fearful of the Taliban, has made its way to Canada. The boy, who we will not identify, says, "In my native tongue, my name means light, and my light has burned bright. My goal is to be a mathematician or an engineer. I want to raise my voice for Afghan women and the Afghan youth. But everything has changed, and my light is dimming. Now I wake up to the sounds of bullets and bombs exploding and places near my houses getting hit by the Taliban rockets."
He thought of living in a different future than what the Taliban are promising to him, and I feel powerless in helping him.
This man, who we will only call by his first name, Mervais, is related to the boy in the letter. He says he's fearful that if this family cannot escape Kabul, his relative, who had been focused on higher education, will be forced down a different path.
He's still young. He's under 15 years old, but within the next 4 or 5 years, he might start thinking like them. He might start talking like them. He believes in women's rights today, but within 5 years of brainwashing, he may stop believing in that. He may turn into a Taliban. That's what I fear the most.
This boy has a sister, a mother, female cousins who all go to school. He's one of seven members of the same family who are trying to come to Canada. Their lawyer here says they're at great risk if they stay.
This family has publicly allied itself with the need for girls' education and has done so in a high-profile way.
Lawyer Aaron Simpson says they've been working with the Canadian government for a month on issuing temporary resident permits for the family. This comes as the Prime Minister today said Canada will be doing regular flights in and out of Afghanistan, but also spoke of the challenges that the international community is facing in evacuating civilians.
Many of those international flights have been leaving Afghanistan and leaving the Kabul airport not full. There are real challenges and impediments on the ground in terms of getting people out, even though there is a clear wish.
while the lawyer for the family says Canada needs to act fast.
Canada can and should be doing more to get people out and evacuated now. This is the moment to do it, and this family should be on that list.
In the letter, the 13-year-old boy says, "I cannot sleep at night because I'm scared of the sound of the bullets and hearing bombing. We are asking Canada, home to the rest of our family and protector of the Afghan people, to provide us safe haven." Shalini Thong, CTV News.
Day five of the federal campaign saw party leaders making big promises on health care, housing and support for seniors.
But the abortion debate was also front and center in the political arena today. CTV's Heather Butts has the details.
Campaigning in a quiet Ottawa neighborhood, Aaron O'Toole pitched his plan to make housing more affordable and increase supply. Conservatives are pledging to build 1 million new homes in the next 3 years, release 15% of vacant federal government buildings and properties for housing, and encourage lenders to offer 7 to 10 year mortgages.
We will ban foreign investors from purchasing homes here if they don't intend to live in or move to Canada.
But another platform promise to protect the conscience rights of healthcare professionals raised questions about whether that would restrict access to abortion. O'Toole declared he's pro-choice but wants to respect medical professionals.
Let's find an appropriate and a fair balance to make sure those rights are accessed, but we can respect conscience provisions as well.
Pro-choice doesn't mean the freedom of doctors to choose. It means the freedom of women to choose.
Hello, sir.
Trudeau's response came while promoting his plan to improve health care for seniors by investing $9 billion over 5 years to train up to 50,000 personal support workers and a guaranteed minimum wage for PSWs of at least $25 per hour.
Going though, how are folks?
It's going well.
NDP leader Jagmeet Singh met with health care workers in Edmonton struggling with staff shortages in hospital and community care.
It gets downloaded onto the family. And
the NDP is pledging a $250 million critical shortages fund that would help train and hire 2,000 nurses.
We're seeing cut after cut that is driving healthcare workers out of the province. We are seeing people that are worried if they're not going to be able to get the care that they need.
Before leaving Edmonton for Regina, Singh held his first outdoor rally of the campaign. Heather Butts, CTV News, Toronto.
Green Party leader Annamie Paul's continuing her campaign here in the city. She spent the day in the riding she hopes to win for herself, Toronto Centre. This week, she revealed her party's proposals to strengthen Canada's social safety net.
While Elections Canada says voting in person will be safe during COVID-19, the agency is urging anyone planning to vote by mail to get the process started. The first step will be applying to vote by mail. That can be done at elections.ca or by contacting Elections Canada by Tuesday, September 14th at 6 p.m. A voting kit will then be sent by mail with instructions on how to fill it out and return it. Postage will be included, but the ballot has to arrive before polls close on Election Day. It can also be dropped off at your polling place on Election Day. And a reminder, you can track every moment of this campaign on our website. We have a special section for you to visit at election.ctvnews.ca.
Some encouraging news out of British Columbia tonight as that province battles a historic wildfire season. Dozens of evacuation alerts have been lifted near the northern flank of the White Rock Lake wildfire. And that's because fire activity is dropping. Environment Canada is also calling for cooler temperatures and possible thundershowers over parts of the southern interior. Around 250 wildfires are still burning across BC.
In Greece, hundreds of firefighters battled a major wildfire northwest of Athens for the fourth straight day. The fire has burned thousands of hectares of forest and forced several villages in the area to be evacuated. Crews on the ground are being supported by water-dropping planes and helicopters, and there are concerns strong winds could complicate efforts to get those flames under control.
More than 1,100 firefighters are trying to put out a wildfire in the French Riviera. Two people have died, 27 have been injured, and at least 10,000 have had to leave the region. The fire has already burned 7,100 hectares since it broke out on Monday, about 40 kilometers inland from Saint-Tropez. It's considered in the top five of the most destructive fires in France in 100 years.
Grace slammed into Mexico as a Category 1 hurricane. And while it's weakened to a tropical storm, that drop isn't expected to last. The system came ashore on the Yucatan Peninsula just south of Tulum early this morning. It packed maximum sustained winds of 130 kilometers per hour. It also brought torrential rain and forced evacuations. The U.S. National Hurricane Center forecasts it will travel west and hit Mexico again Friday night as a hurricane. In North Carolina, search and rescue efforts are ongoing after Tropical Storm Fred caused widespread flooding.
Desperately needed aid is now arriving in Haiti following last weekend's earthquake and subsequent damage from Tropical Storm Grace. A United Nations helicopter and charity aircraft delivered food and medical supplies to the airport. Tensions had been growing over the slow distribution of aid, as the country was already facing deep poverty and a lack of basic infrastructure. The death toll from the quake has now surpassed 2,100. More than 12,000 people were also injured.
The U.S. is moving forward with booster shots for anyone who's received two doses of COVID-19 vaccine. Officials say that doesn't mean current levels of protection are low, but they could be better.
You remain protected from severe disease and death for up to six, eight, perhaps longer months. And so what this booster is going to do is to optimize that protection, to extend that protection longer.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say they're taking the step of offering boosters as the Delta variant poses a greater threat. The World Health Organization says third shots shouldn't be offered when people in many countries can't even access one.
Moves by some countries globally to introduce booster shots threaten the promise of a brighter tomorrow for Africa. As some richer countries hoard vaccines, they make a mockery, frankly, of vaccine equity.
The U.S. says it can vaccinate its own population and still help other countries. Israel announced today it's offering third doses to all those above age 40 as it faces a rising case count.
Back here at home, the countdown is on for the return to school, but how prepared are students to get back to class?
Whether it's trying to get a head start or catching up, it seems many are already focusing on their studies. CTV's John Musselman reports.
Staff at this Kumon Learning Center in Bloor West Village are getting ready for a busy fall.
I blocked this time up until the end of September. No vacation for me, so I come to the center 6 days a week.
Owner and director Mahmoud Rakia says many of his students had a tough time adjusting to virtual learning last year. He says he's seeing a surge in demand from parents.
Because of the interruption of learning last year, most parents believe that their children need extra help in order to get them through this coming year.
Tracy Matos is entering grade 8 in September. She says last year was tough. She couldn't really connect with virtual learning.
Hard to concentrate and just harder to learn, in my opinion, because just with you could just concentrate. Yeah, it's just like so different compared to normal school that you're used to.
And we heard similar stories at most of the tutoring services, parents and kids just looking for a bit of extra help as they get ready to go back to the classroom. Kamalika Basu is the education coordinator at the Oxford Learning Center in Etobicoke.
The transition from in-person learning in schools to virtual learning has, many students could not take it very well.
You sort of need to depend on other people to help learn as well. Like in group projects, it just felt weird that you didn't get to see them, you didn't get to talk.
Most tutoring services cost anywhere from $100 to $150 a month. John Musselman, CTV News.
Still to come, we've heard about the toll this pandemic's taken on the healthcare workers. Tonight, the numbers that prove just how hard those on the medical front line have been affected.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, if you're looking for an apartment to rent, it's getting more competitive. Some landlords are even charging a $45 fee just to apply to see a unit. Tenant advocates say that's illegal. We also look at some other fees you shouldn't have to pay. All of that story just ahead.
It's hot out there, but it's not record heat. The temperature to beat for today is about 35 degrees. We were close. We made it to 31. Warmer than yesterday and certainly warmer than our seasonal average of 25. We are now under a heat warning here in the city of Toronto, and that's because, again, tomorrow we are expecting a daytime high of 30 degrees or higher. Factor in the humidity, and in many areas, it is going to feel like 34 or even up to 40. So once again, we are encouraging you to find ways to keep cool and beat the heat. One of the ways that you can be a good neighbor or family member is to check in on those who may be a little more susceptible to heat-related illnesses. We get a little bit of a break from the heat on Saturday, but not by much. It's a pretty warm 7-day forecast, and we will detail everything you need to know coming up next here on CTV News.
As we told you last night, the cost to rent an apartment or condo has been creeping back up in the GTA to pre-pandemic levels.
And as it gets more competitive to find a unit, some landlords are charging new fees for prospective tenants they shouldn't have to pay. What's going on, Pat?
That's right, Michelle and Nathan. A woman says when she applied to rent an apartment, she was told she would have to pay a $45 application fee. And if she didn't want the unit, the fee was non-refundable. Tenant advocates say doing that is illegal.
And I've rented in Toronto, I've rented in Ottawa.
Jillian, who asked us not to use her last name, has been a tenant in Toronto before and currently rents in Ottawa. She says she wanted a larger unit because she's working from home and could use more space. When she answered an ad for an apartment, she was told to see it, she would need to pay a non-refundable rental application fee of $45.
I thought it was kind of exploitative because I don't understand why they were charging that fee. So I found it really unfair.
As demand for apartment and condo units increases, there are reports some landlords are introducing new charges, including application fees. Tenant advocates say that's not allowed.
Landlords cannot charge you fees up front to apply for a place.
Jordy Dent says fees landlords can't charge include an application fee, deposits to hold units, cleaning charges, and a finder's fee.
Those are strictly prohibited under the law, and you shouldn't pay them, and you should be very wary of any landlord that's asking you to do that because they're breaking the law.
Fees landlords can charge once an application has been approved include first and last month's rent, a key or access card deposit, and fees for late rent payments if a rent check fails to clear. Dent says another reason not to pay money in advance without seeing an apartment is that it could be a scam.
The landlord's telling you you can't see the place. Be very, very wary.
As for Jillian, she decided to stay in her current apartment. When CTV News reached out to the landlord that was charging the application fees, they said they would remove the $45 charge from the application process.
And if you're searching for an apartment, also watch out for scam listings. Never send funds to someone without meeting the landlord in person and getting a tour of the unit firsthand to make sure it exists. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
It's a hot night in the city. We actually have a heat warning in effect, but if you like the hot weather and dry conditions, we are in for quite a stretch.
Very true. I'm noticing the night's also very hot. Hopefully things cool down tonight, Lindsay.
Well, not so much, Nathan. Unfortunately, the temperature should hover just below that 20-degree mark. I'm just enjoying that beautiful shot we had there of Lake Ontario sparkling behind the two of you. So 19 for the overnight low. We have had a little bit of a pattern flip. It's cooler in Western Canada. It's heating up in the east, and it looks like the hot weather is going to be with us really over the next 7 days. Weather is brought to you by Train. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a train. Before we dive into the details here at home, an update on our tropical systems we've been monitoring, including the remnants of Fred just to the south of us in the lower Great Lakes, mainly impacting New England. We also have Tropical Storm Henri, and this tropical storm, it is sweeping around Bermuda. This could end up being a weather maker for our friends in Atlantic Canada as we make our way through the early part of next week. And then as as we mentioned, there is also Tropical Storm Grace. It already made landfall for Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, but it is going to re-strengthen as it moves back over those warm waters of the Gulf and makes landfall for a second time. So we'll continue to monitor those. Overnight tonight, so there's that not-so-low low that we're talking about, 19 degrees in the city of Toronto. Factor in the humidity, it will feel like the mid-20s. At least it's not feeling like 30 through the overnight hours like it was at times last week, but we do have a heat warning in effect, and this is issued by Environment Canada. It was just issued within the last half hour to 40 minutes, and this is warning of conditions that are going to feel quite hot through the day tomorrow and perhaps over the weekend too, although a little bit of relief is on the way at that point. The UV index tomorrow will be an 8 or very high, so make sure you're protecting yourself from the sun's rays. Condition-wise, we can expect mainly sunny skies for tomorrow, and part of the reason for that is an area of high pressure. It's a ridge that's really locking itself in place, and this is going to mean not much in the way of rainfall over the next couple of days. I'll pause this as we make our way into Friday evening, so about 24 hours from now, maybe a couple of showers or thunderstorms in eastern sections of the province. On Saturday, maybe a pop-up shower or two. There's a couple of areas that could be at risk for experiencing a thunderstorm, but other than that, it's going to be dry in most communities. Here's the seven-day forecast, and again, when we say a little bit of a cool down for the weekend, we're talking highs of 29 as opposed to 30, so still quite warm. Factor in the humidity, it's going to feel like 40 right through the day on Sunday. A little more pleasant as we make our way through the early part of next week, mainly sunny skies, and perhaps a little bit of wet weather on the way by next Wednesday or Thursday. That's your look at the weather for now. Stay with us. CTV News, we'll be right back.
New figures are shedding light on the impact of this pandemic on healthcare workers.
While COVID cases among health staff have grown this year, their proportion of overall infections is actually dropping. CTV's Pauline Chan reports.
The report looks at COVID infections among doctors, nurses, and PSWs up to June this year, and it found there have been 43 deaths among healthcare workers since the start of the pandemic, with almost 95,000 COVID-19 infections.
But what we are seeing is that there is a decline in the share of cases in the overall populations.
Healthcare workers now comprise 6.8% of all infections, down from almost 20% a year ago.
You know, with improved access to personal protective equipment, the ongoing consistent use of public health measures, the prioritization of vaccinations among healthcare workers, these are certainly some of the things that can contribute to lower infections.
Personal support workers, or PSWs, have been the hardest hit group.
So they're actually over three times greater than physicians and almost two times greater than nurses.
PSWs often work at multiple facilities facing greater potential exposure to the virus. The Ontario PSW Association says we are not surprised to hear that personal support workers are at a significant higher risk of contracting COVID-19. If we are to combat the COVID-19, personal support workers will need to be better protected and listened to. And the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario says while the decreasing proportion of infections is good, there's still concern about the future.
We have reached a plateau.
CEO Doris Grinspun says nurses have been leaving the profession due to burnout during the pandemic, and those left behind have to carry an even greater workload, creating a vicious cycle of departures.
The answer is vaccine, vaccine, vaccine.
She's calling on the government to mandate vaccinations for all healthcare workers or at least twice weekly testing. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
As countries roll out booster shots, new data out of the UK suggests the protection offered by COVID vaccines may lessen after a few months, at least against the Delta variant. Researchers at Oxford University tested people who'd received both doses of the Pfizer and AstraZeneca shots. After 90 days, the Pfizer vaccine provided 75% protection against the variant, down from 85% 2 weeks after. The AstraZeneca vaccine had 61% protection, down from 68%. Health experts say any data on vaccine efficacy should be analyzed carefully.
Of course, the antibody levels are important because that might predict a decline in protection that's emerging. But I think it's also important to look at what actually happened in the real world.
Health officials have stressed the main goal of vaccines is to prevent severe infections and death, not just case numbers.
Nicole Kidman has found herself at the center of a controversy in Hong Kong. The government has confirmed it granted the actor an exemption from strict quarantine rules. All visitors from medium or high-risk countries are required to isolate for 14 days at their own expense. But Kidman got to skirt that rule when she arrived to film a series there. Residents are calling the situation a double standard. Officials say anyone with an exemption has to comply with disease prevention measures.
Mervish Productions has added new performances from comedian Eddie Izzard as she helps reopen the CAA Theater. Izzard's in Toronto filming a TV series, but she did a number of socially distanced and sold-out shows earlier in the month. She'll do it again August 28th and 29th. Izzard is performing Charles Dickens' Great Expectations and a review of highlights from her over 30 years in comedy. All of Izzard's profits will go to Inspire, a charity focusing on First Nations education. Tickets are on sale now.
Marvel has released the final trailer for its upcoming superhero film titled Eternals.
How long do we have?
7 days.
We were instructed not to.
The movie takes place after the event seen in The Avengers. A group of immortal beings wake up on planet Earth to face a serious threat. The Eternals was directed by Chloe Zhao and features a star-studded cast, and it's set to hit theaters in November.
I took the Premier at his word that vaccination is a choice and that all Ontarians have a constitutional right to make such a choice.
Updating our top stories, MPP Rick Nichols has been removed from the PC caucus after refusing to be vaccinated against COVID-19. His dismissal comes as the province announces a mandatory vaccination policy for the entire Ontario public service.
Today, I'm announcing that the City of Toronto will implement a mandatory requirement for staff to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19.
And all City of Toronto employees and TTC workers are required to be fully vaccinated by October 30th. The union representing TTC operators says it's concerned about the policy, while Toronto Police says it's considering its own policy.
Today, I'm announcing that the City of Toronto will implement a mandatory requirement for staff to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19.
And cyclists are calling for expanded bike lanes after an 18-year-old was struck and killed by a cement truck on Avenue Road.
And police say it appears the driver could not see Eskenan and did not leave him enough room. So there's so much discussion tonight about the mandatory vaccines from the city to the TTC and now at Queen's Park. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Jamie Goodfreund. Jamie, you're going to be looking at the legal and ethical implications here.
Yeah, this is obviously huge news coming from the City of Toronto, mandating that all of their employees be fully vaccinated and also show proof of that vaccination. So we're going to be speaking, as you mentioned, Michelle, about the legal and the ethical ramifications. We've got a human rights lawyer that's coming on the panel tonight, and along with an employment and labor relations lawyer to tell you what your rights are.
And Jamie, you'll also be taking a closer look at a new survey about the struggles restaurants are having to stay afloat.
Yeah, we all know that the restaurants and hospitality industry has been one of the hardest hit sectors. And according to a new survey from Restaurants Canada, about 25% of these restaurants might not even survive if some of these conditions don't change soon. So we're going to be speaking with some of these restaurant owners to talk about, you know, what needs to be done to save this struggling industry.
A lot to get to. Thank you, Jamie. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down to close at 77.98 U.S. American benchmark oil slipped $1.77 to close at 63.69 a barrel. And the TSX Composite Index fell 86 points to end the day at 20,215.
A new poll from KPMG shows most small and medium businesses are relying heavily on vaccines in their efforts to return to normal. The poll found 62% of those businesses are making or will make COVID-19 vaccinations mandatory for their employees. 84% supported the idea of vaccine passports being required to perform certain jobs or enter certain places. A full 90% said they feel they're well prepared in bringing employees back to the workplace safely.
A new report says Canadians are racking up mortgage debt faster than at any point since before the financial crisis. Bloomberg cites data from Stats Canada showing the total value of mortgages rose by 1.2% in June to $1.73 trillion. It hasn't grown that fast since 2007. But with the housing market starting to slow down from its pandemic highs, it's expected the pace of borrowing will also drop.
Maple Leaf star Austin Matthews will be gracing the cover of the upcoming NHL 22 video game.
The honor comes after Matthews led the league in goals for the first time in his career.
A tradition finds itself at odds with progress. Edging ever so close to an inflection point.
It's the second time Matthews has appeared on the cover of the annual hockey franchise. He was also on the cover for the NHL 20. Matthews also posted a picture of the game's cover on Twitter. It's set to be released on October 15th. Looks good.
Mm-hmm. The facial hair, they're keeping it very realistic.
Very true.
All right, bring us up to speed on this heat and the sunny days ahead.
Yeah, it's hard to think about hockey on a hot August night like this, but we are under a heat warning here in the city of Toronto. This was issued within the last hour, and really it's warning of an uncomfortable overnight tonight. Look at these temperatures, still in the upper 20s, feeling into the 30s, but also a very warm day tomorrow. This is a quick look at your patio forecast for tonight. It's going to be a clear night. A little bit of fog will be possible overnight. And then over the next 7 days, not much in the way of relief. A little bit of relief from the heat over the weekend, but lots of dry, sunny weather in store over the next seven. Nathan and Michelle, back to you.
All right. Thanks, Lindsay. Be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Good night.